It hits me. If Violet got a B-, then how tough was the grading on this exam? Just like that, the confidence I'd felt earlier this morning drains right out of me. And when I open the director's door, my knees are shaking. "Jessica, come in," she says, waving me toward one of the heavy wooden chairs in front of her desk. Carol Taylor is in her 60s, with bright blue eyes and a quick smile. Her friendly face does nothing for my nerves, though. It's her job to maintain the excellence of the program. And if I'm not excellent, I'm sure they'll show me the door. "Let's get right to it," she says as my stomach rolls. She opens a file folder and pulls out my anatomy exam. I can see the skeleton outline on the first page. "An A-minus on your anatomy and physiology exam. Keep up the good work."
"Thank you."
"Nurse Haley liked your observational work." She's skimming some notes on a page. "And then there's your pharmacology score." She flips the page. I brace myself. She leans closer to the exam booklet.
"I'm dying."
"The professor has awarded you a B-, she finally reveals. I let out a gasp of excitement.
"Oh, don't be sad,"
she says, misunderstanding my reaction. "The notes are good. Your essay was brief but succinct. Good grasp of the basics."
"I'm not sad," I say quickly. "That test was hard, and I was worried about my grade point average. I have the Harper Scholarship to reapply for in the spring."
Carol looks up. "Oh, honey, don't worry so much about that. We make everyone reapply because it gives us an out if someone isn't putting in the effort. But it's clear to me that you're going to become a fine nurse."
"It is?"
She smiles. "Of course. Nurse Haley is very pleased with your work in the retirement home. She says you take a lot of care to put your patients at ease. You sing to them.
Thank you, Dyson. Sometimes."
"She also said," Carol flips back a page in my file, "that a pediatric cancer patient raved about your visit. Read this when you get a chance." She hands over the whole folder. "That patient is having surgery soon, and Nurse Haley thought the young woman would enjoy a visit from you."
"Oh, wow."
I take the file back, but I'm still hearing the echo of B-minus in my head. It's better than I expected. I can hardly believe it. "You've done well, Jessica. In fact, I expect the second trimester to feel easier for you."
"Really?"
"Our returning students always have an adjustment period. They're usually intimidated to be back in the classroom setting. But with comments like these, your prognosis is excellent." She smiles. "Thank you for stopping by." I shake her hand eagerly and then scamper out of there like an eager puppy.
Real men can wear pom-poms. 3 weeks later. Blake. Right after Jess and I got together, I was a little worried that I wouldn't remember how to be somebody's boyfriend. I mean, it's been 5 years since I held that title, and there's really no proof that I was any good at this shit before. When your girlfriend lies to your face about your fake baby, a guy has to take a step back and ask himself where he went so wrong. Yet, I had nothing to fear. Turns out I'm a fabulous boyfriend. Every time I pass a flower shop, I buy my Jessie a bouquet. I've taken her out to dinner at all the hot spots, including the ones where I have to drop my own name to get in. Since it's sort of embarrassing to drop your own name, I have a system. I call up, pretending to be my own assistant. I don't have an assistant, but these Mitter D's don't know that. "Hi," I say kind of breathlessly, as if I'm about to kick my own ass if the reservation doesn't come through. "So sorry to call at the last minute, but Blake Riley is in town tonight, and he wants to take his girlfriend out to dinner somewhere awesome. He says you have the best sushi around." Most of the time, they just tell me to name the hour and they'll be ready. Once in a while, I'll get someone on the line who doesn't know who Blake Riley is. I mean, who I am. It's fucking confusing to impersonate yourself. Anyway, last week I had to make someone look me up on Wikipedia. There's no way that chick was Canadian. I mean, please. But she got with the program and Jess and I had a fabulous meal. What's the use of being a little bit more famous if you can't drop $300 on a sushi dinner for your best girl? Funny thing is, I told Jess how I work my magic and she didn't even believe me. Seriously? She'd slid me a sideways glance across the sofa. They give you a table wherever you want? They have the hockey roster memorized? Oh, Jesse. She keeps my ego in check. Occasionally when we're out together, people stop me for my autograph, and she always looks a little puzzled. That's my girl. At any rate, I've got this boyfriend thing down. Turns out it's like riding a bike, but the bike is a hot blonde with big brown eyes and perfect tits. And I'm a really good rider. Not only have we broken in every room of my apartment, we've hit most of the available surfaces, too. Except for the vibrating chair, because I'm saving that one for a special occasion. But now, the regular season schedule is kicking into high gear, and I'm really going to miss my girl when I'm on the road. Today we get a few hours together, though. They can't all be fancy sushi days. Jess has asked me for a ride to the bank where they process her student loans because it's located at an inconvenient corner of Toronto. We're also stopping by the hospital where she's visiting that young patient who made her so sad a few weeks ago, Layla. Jess flat out told me that I'm really there for moral support. The ride is just extra. Even though she's feeling much more confident about nursing school, I can tell she's still wigged out about dealing with the scary cases. I don't blame her. Some things just require a little extra whiz-fizz, so I tell her that. A little... what did you say? Jess asks on her way to the bank. Whiz-fizz. Energy. Mojo. Call it what you want. But everyone can turn it on when they need to. Dig deep, Jesse. This girl likes you, right? You're her happy thought. She looks unconvinced, so I tell her that I brought along two jerseys to sign. One is for the sick girl and one is for her little brother. I don't know if he's into hockey, but it's still a nice gesture, Jess says as I pull into the bank's parking lot. Of course he's into hockey, I argue. This is Canada. Right. Her perfect lips twitch. I forgot. I settle into a chair in the bank lobby with a copy of Sports Illustrated, but Jess reappears before I've even finished with the first article. That was quick. It only takes a moment to sign your life away, she replies. I hate that she has to stress about money. It's just a freak thing that I don't. I mean, I'd play hockey even if they didn't pay me, but they do. A lot. Jess doesn't like to talk about money, and I try to respect her wishes. But one of these days, I'm going to figure out how to make things a little easier for her without getting yelled at. Last week, I tried to ask her why she isn't going home to California for American Thanksgiving. I'm pretty sure she can't afford the ticket, but when I pressed her on it, she got all testy. So I had to back her up against the wall and lift up her skirt and press her in a completely different way just to calm her down. Back in the Hummer, I head for the hospital. Jess looks out the window as I steer toward the other end of town. She looks nervous. When I park in the hospital lot, she turns to me. You don't have to come in if you don't want to. It's kind of grim up there. Whiz fizz, baby. I wink at her. I'm in. As long as I get a kiss after. But Jess feels like giving my prize in advance. Her face softens, and she leans toward me. I meet her over the gearbox and receive one very soft kiss and a grateful smile. After I grab the jerseys out of the back, we go inside, holding hands in the elevator. On the children's ward, Jess stops outside room 302. She takes a deep breath and then taps on the door. Come in, says a low voice. We enter to find a skinny teenager in a bed with a blanket pulled up to her chin. And right away I realize one important truth. I'm such an idiot. I thought I had enough jollies to get us both through this, but the girl's blanket looks like a scratchy hospital edition, and I realize I should have brought one of the plush Toronto blankets instead. My mom has them all over the house. I brought this sick girl a jersey. It's so fucking impractical that I want to choke myself with it. And she's too skinny, and her eyes are scared, and there's a lump in my throat the size of a hockey puck. How does any nurse get through the day? Fucking fuckity fuck. But the girl's expression lightens up as soon as she sees me. Oh my god. Hey, Layla, Jess says, her face about 50 times cheerier than mine. Do you remember me? We did some knitting together. I'm Jess, a nursing student. Okay, Jess, the nursing student. One skinny finger emerges from under the blanket. She points it at me. Is that really Blake Riley? Or did they fuck up my meds again? If I'm hallucinating right now, this is a good one.
I guess that's my cue.
Hey there, Layla. Nice to meet you. I offer her my hand. She takes it, still staring at me. Are you in the wrong room? I didn't make one of those wishes from that foundation. They do some cool stuff, but I think it's bad luck to take them up on it. I see a tiny shudder go through her.
So, you're superstitious?
I ask. I can work with this.
Because I'm hella superstitious. On game day, I had to fill up my gas tank before driving to the rink. One time, I drove there on empty and I had a shitty game. Oh, fuck. Am I not supposed to say shitty on the children's ward?
Layla cracks up. So, I'm winning.
Here, I brought you something.
I open the shopping bag and pull out both the jerseys.
One is for you, and I heard you had a brother.
She squeals.
No way! Will you sign them?
Of course.
I'm signing the shirts with my Sharpie when Layla finally turns her attention to Jess.
Did you do this?
She demands. I have a dirty mind, so right away I'm thinking about it literally.
Oh, she did this, all right.
I give Jess an inappropriate grin, which she returns with a glare that suggests I should take it down a notch. To the girl she says,
Blake is my boyfriend.
Layla's head thumps back against the pillow. Holy crap. And before, you wanted to talk about knitting? You were seriously holding out on me.
I love knitting almost as much as I love him,
Jess says with an eye roll. And knitting is less egotistical.
I don't even argue with the egotistical part because Jess just said she loved me. Did that really just happen?
Where is your knitting? Jess asks. I wanted to see how the hat turned out.
With the practiced ease of someone who's been here way too long, Layla reaches over to open the hospital bedside drawer. She pulls out a somewhat lumpy hat in a burgundy color with yellow stripes.
Do you think it needs a pom-pom? What do you think of the bind-off?
Jess takes the hat and admires it.
The ribbing turned out perfectly, and your bind-off is great. Not too tight. I was worried about that. It's perfect. He's going to love it. Do you have extra yarn so we could try a pom-pom?
Sure. They get out the yarn, and Jess shows Layla how to wrap it around spread-out fingers, or something. My gaze wanders around the room to the collection of get-well cards on the windowsill. There are a million of them. Jess and Layla make a gold-colored pom-pom, one of them holding the tuft of wrapped threads, the other tying a knot around them tightly. Their two heads are bent together in concentration.
Okay, let's see what you think.
Jess holds the hat up, her hand securing the pom-pom on top. Layla says, squinting critically.
Maybe it's more macho without?
Jess pulls the ornament away again.
I kind of see what you mean. What do you think, Blake? Can a real man wear a pom-pom on his hat?
A real man can wear anything, I say. Especially if it's handmade by someone who loves me. So, where's my hat?
I seek out Jess's eyes, and when she smiles, her cheeks pink up. She quickly turns her attention back to Layla's knitting.
It's perfect. He's going to love it.
The girl fingers the stitches on the brim, her throat visibly bobbing.
I'm having surgery tomorrow.
I know,
Jess says softly.
Again?
That sucks. My girlfriend empathizes.
If something happens to me, would you make sure my brother gets the hat? I'm just worried that my parents would be too...
She clears her throat.
Of course, Jess says firmly. You're going to be fine, but I understand why you wouldn't want to take any chances with, like, 14 hours of knitting.
I know, right? Layla laughs. Her eyes are shiny.
Just that ribbing took half my life.
My heart sinks when I do the math on how many years half her life might turn out to be. Jess, meanwhile, just smiles back at her.
The best stuff always takes a while, right?
She tucks the extra yarn into the bedside table.
I'll come by the day after tomorrow with a box and some wrapping paper so you can hide it properly until Christmas. Oh, awesome.
Now Layla is looking at Jess the same way she looked at me when we walked in, and I know without any doubt that all of her patients will wear that same expression when she enters their rooms. Jess is a rock star. She leans over Layla and gives the kid a hug.
Me too, I say, bending over the both of them. Group hug.
I want a picture. Layla begs as I squeeze the both of them. My brother is going to freak out when I tell him I met you.
Awesome, I love freaking people out. Where's your phone?
The phone is fetched and I sit one half of my ass on the bed so I can take a good photo with Layla. And I smile for the camera even though my heart is breaking. My smile stays in place until we exit the hospital building. But once we step outside, I take a giant breath of non-sanitized air and let it out in a gust.
Fuck a duck, how do you do that?
Do what? Jess squeezes my hand. She looks calm and happy now,
and I'm a total wreck. That? Help a kid with her knitting when she might die? Jesus. I think I need some chocolate ice cream just to rebound from that.
Uh-huh.
She jumps up to smack a kiss on my cheek.
You were great. I thought she was going to burst a vessel just from shaking your hand.
Yeah, but that was just because I play hockey on TV, you know? That's just a party trick. You're the one who really soothed her. You're amazing.
I sweep her up in my arms until her feet leave the ground and hold on tight. I don't plan to ever let her go.
Jess and I go back to my place, which is where we usually hang out on the nights I'm home. Her dorm room is the size of my closet and offers zero privacy. And we need lots of privacy for the dirty activities we like to engage in. I don't know how dirty we'll get tonight, though. Jess has been quiet ever since we left the hospital. I guess she's bummed about Layla's surgery. Good thing I'm a pro at cheering her up. Hey, you want to go out for ice cream? I call out from the kitchen. Jess is on the living room couch, her blonde head bent over her laptop.
It's November, she calls back.
Is that a yes?
Nope. Her tone is absent-minded, and I can tell she's not listening to me at all. I wander over to the sectional.
What are you looking at?
Before my ass even hits the cushions, Jess has slammed the laptop shut.
I grin. Porn, huh? All right. I start to unzip my pants. Let's do this.
She lets out a strangled laugh. We're not watching porn together.
But we're a couple now,
I protest.
That's what couples do.
I reach for the computer.
So what are we watching, girl on girl, menage?
I wasn't watching porn. She sounds exasperated, and she's slapping my hand away from the laptop, which only heightens my curiosity.
Then what were you doing? I challenge.
Jess huffs out of breath. If you must know, I was checking my credit card balance. She smacks my hand again and I release the MacBook. And there's no way I'm letting you see it. My bleak financial landscape is kind of a mood killer, okay? I frown. I noticed she'd been charging a lot to her Visa lately, but I hadn't realized her cash sitch was that dire.
How bleak?
I ask slowly. Her bottom lip drops out. Very bleak, she admits. My living expenses are higher than I thought they'd be, and I already burned through all the money I got from selling my car back in Cali. I narrow my eyes.
Is this why you're not going home for Thanksgiving?
I know Jamie already bought his plane ticket home and is leaving in a couple of days, but every time I've asked Jess why she's not going with him, she's insisted she's swamped with schoolwork and can't afford to take the time off. Which makes sense because Canadian Thanksgiving was a month ago and the school doesn't take a break for the American holiday. The way she guiltily averts her eyes tells me I'm right. It's not just the money, she mutters. I really can't miss school.
Jamie's only going for 2 days,
I point out.
I'm sure you'll be able to catch up on 2 days worth of work.
I hesitate.
You could hit me up for a loan.
Her jaw hardens. No, I am not borrowing money from you. I'm not borrowing money from anyone anymore, okay? Then she shoots off the couch and stalks to the kitchen where she grabs a drinking glass from the cabinet. She continues to grumble as she fills it with water from the dispenser in the fridge. Jamie and Wes already offered to lend me some. My mom offered to buy me a ticket so I could come home. She turns to glare at me. And I said thank you, but no. You want to know why? I bite my lip to keep from laughing.
Because you're a stubborn Susie who apparently hates Thanksgiving?
Jess slams the glass on the counter without even taking a sip. I love Thanksgiving, she bursts out, and there's a slight crack to her voice. I love turkey and stuffing and cranberries, and I love California, and I love my family, and I hate relying on them for money. I hate not having $500 measly in the bank to pay for a plane ticket home. I hate it. I'm at her side in a heartbeat, resting both hands on her shoulders. I try to pull her close. She resists at first. Then her entire body seems to sag, and she melts against me, her cheek resting on my left pec. I feel so guilty, she mumbles. My parents paid for my first college education, and now they're paying for part of this second one. They keep helping me out even after I've screwed up. You know how humiliating that is sometimes? Jesse. I thread my fingers through her soft hair. You shouldn't feel humiliated. Your family helps you because they love you. I know. Her voice is muffled against my chest. But I want to start helping myself. I want to start helping them. I want to pay them back every dime. I want to get a nursing job and be successful at it. You will, I say with conviction. Her head tips up, brown eyes flickering with uncertainty. You really believe that? Of course. You're going to be a kick-ass nurse. And soon, you'll be making dough hand over fist. You'll be the first nurse to hit the Forbes list. Jess laughs. Wow, you aim high, huh? For the stars, babe. Always aim for the stars. I sweep my thumb along her cheekbone. It's slightly damp, as if a few tears slipped out when I wasn't looking. And here's the thing. If my man Sandy offers to pay for your airfare, it's not because she feels sorry for you or wants to rub it in your face that you're broke. It's because she loves you and misses you and wants to see you. A trace of guilt returns to her eyes. I know, but I can't accept any more money from them, Blake. I just can't. I grasp her chin with my hand. Then accept it from me. Her mouth falls open. No. Yes. I pin her with a stern look. Let me buy you a plane ticket home, baby. I know you miss them. I've seen the longing in her expression the last few times we've visited my family. The Riley clan is as loud and boisterous as the Canning crew, but I know it's not the same as being with her own family. I do miss them. She bites her lip. But, no. I appreciate the offer, Blake. I really do, but... But nothing. Let me do this for you. No. Yes. And you know what? It's not even a loan. It's a gift. No. Yes. I mean it, J-Babe. I want to give you this gift. She sighs. You're not going to let me say no, are you? I grin widely. She's learning. She starts doing the lip-biting thing again, which stirs the Blake snake to life. I ease my hips back slightly so she doesn't feel my semi-snake pressing against her belly. I don't want her to think I want to bone her right now, or worse, that she has to bone me in exchange for this plane ticket. Don't you get it by now? I say gruffly. I want you to be happy. I want to be the one making you happy. 'Cause that's what couples do. She finishes, a wry smile playing on her lips. Yep. That's what couples do. They make each other happy. I reach down and smack her ass. So open up that laptop of yours and find us a good flight deal. Us? Shit. I immediately regret the phrasing because there's a happy glimmer in her eyes now. But there's no way I can go to Cali with her. We've got 3 days of East Coast road games this week. That's why Wes can't go. You, I correct ruefully. I wish I could come with you, but it doesn't work with our schedule. Right, she nods. The road games. There's a pause. Maybe next time? I can't hide the pleasure that swamps me. It shows itself in the form of a broad smile. You'd really take me home with you? Why not? My folks already know we're dating. Besides, it's not a real relationship until you've been interrogated, tortured, and made fun of by my siblings. I snicker. Let them try. I can out-torture anyone, babe. I just act extra annoying and they wave a white flag to get me to stop babbling. She snorts, then wanders back to the couch and picks up her laptop. I stand back for a moment, admiring the way her loose shirt slides off one smooth shoulder, and how long her legs look in those stretchy yoga pants, and how fucking hot she looks sitting on my couch. My gaze shifts to the stack of textbooks on my coffee table, and the bright blue winter jacket draped over one of the counter stools. her laptop case on the hardwood. And then there are items I can't see, Jess's toothbrush and toiletries in my bathroom. The extra PJs, my favorite ones with the cartoon bananas, she keeps in my dresser. These past few weeks, little signs of Jess have made their way into my apartment, and I like it. I like coming home after a brutal game to find that she let herself in with the spare key I gave her and cooked dinner for me. I like snuggling up to her warm, soft body and falling asleep together. "If you're serious about this ticket, there's a crazy deal happening on this travel site right now," she says from the sofa. "Jess," I say slowly. She peers up from the screen. "Yeah?" I take a breath. Shit. Is this nuts? The last time I let a woman into my private domain, she turned my entire life upside down. She took my freaking dog and then abandoned him in another province. She broke my heart. But Jess isn't Molly. Jess isn't insecure or vindictive or scared of anything other than looking like a failure in the eyes of the people she loves. I want her to move in. I do. But the doubts have already crept in, and as she sits there looking at me with those inquisitive brown eyes, I can't bring myself to make the offer. So I say, "Make sure to check lastminuteair.com. They've, got good deals, too."
Reunited, and it feels so sexy. Jess. When I return to Toronto after Thanksgiving, I feel completely and utterly rejuvenated. The trip to California was just what I needed, and I hadn't realized just how much I missed my family until I was back in their loud, crazy, chaotic clutches again. I swear my niece Lilac has doubled in size. Joe is a new girlfriend. Tammy's husband got a promotion. Brady grew what Jamie and I dubbed a pimp mustache. I was sad to say goodbye to them, but happy to say hello to Blake. I can't believe how much I missed that big oaf, and I was gone for only 2 days. My first order of business when I got back was taking a cab to his place, straight from the airport, and spending about, 10 hours in bed with him. Blake called it our reunited and it feels so sexy, sexy times. I pointed out that the back-to-back use of the word sexy was kind of redundant, at which point he said I was redundant and proceeded to fuck me again, which leads me to believe he doesn't know what redundant means. Now it's 2 weeks since my trip and I'm over at Blake's apartment again. Hell, I'm over so often I almost feel like I live here, and Blake doesn't seem to mind that I'm all but squatting at his condo. It's just so spacious. My dorm room is teeny and offers even less privacy than before because Violet is, wait for it, dating someone. I couldn't believe it when I got back to discover that she's going out with Keith Chan, one of our fellow nursing students. I guess she's finally starting to chill out, letting go of that must study always mentality. And also, Blake is here. I can tell myself that it's the floor plan that draws me to apartment 1504, but it's really the big guy at the other end of the sofa. I sneak a look at him, and he doesn't notice, because his attention is focused on the movie listings. I study his sturdy jaw and rugged cheekbones, his laugh lines at the corners of his mouth, and I feel my own smile start to grow just from looking at him. I always told myself I'd end up with someone deep and artsy, but it's a fun-loving, Goliath-sized hockey player that makes me smile like an idiot whenever we're in the same room together. Who knew?
"Baby cakes," Blake grumbles from a few feet away. "I'm horny."
I snicker at him. "I know you are, big boy, but tough cookies. Stay over there on your side until the surprise arrives." He pats his crotch.
"I'll give you a surprise. How about that?"
"Nope." I point to the screen. "Be quiet and watch the game." At his exaggerated huff, I hide a smile. He's been trying to tear my clothes off ever since I arrived, but I'm expecting a delivery and don't want us getting interrupted by the doorbell. Of course, asking Blake to keep his pants zipped is like asking a dog not to lick his balls, so I've banished him to the far end of the sofa for the time being.
The game's over, he complains.
I glance at the TV and realize he's right. The Chicago game has been replaced with the news. Watch something else, then.
Okay. Take off your clothes and I'll watch you.
Blake.
What?
I'm about to give you the best surprise of your life, I inform him. The least you can do is quit whining like a preschooler. He heaves himself off the couch.
Fine, I'm taking a shower, then.
One brow arches at me.
And maybe I'll shake the snake when I'm in there. How do you like that?
If it shuts you up, I'll take it. I wave my hand toward the hallway. Go! I'll come get you if the delivery shows up before you're out.
You're no fun, J-Babe.
His footsteps thump on the hardwood as he trudges off. He might be pouting now, but that'll change once he sees what I have in store for him. I've been shaking with excitement for 3 days now. I hear the faint sound of running water from the direction of the master bedroom and nod in approval. Good. I hope he is jerking off in there, because once that door buzzer goes off, we probably won't be having sex at all tonight. Knock, knock. My head jerks toward the door. What the hell? Nobody gets into the building without getting buzzed in first. The doorman in the lobby makes sure of that. Besides, my delivery person is supposed to text me when she's downstairs. Wary, I rise to my feet and walk to the front hall. Blake's door doesn't have a peephole, so I keep the chain on as I open the door just slightly. A gasp gets stuck in my throat when I find Molly standing there. Her expression darkens the moment her eyes meet mine. Her pretty face a mixture of shock, anger, and annoyance. What are you doing here? She demands. I force myself to remain calm. But seriously? I think the more important question is, what are you doing here? And how did you get up here? Molly's lips tighten. Can you please take that chain off? It's rude. I'm the rude one in this equation? Ha! Still, I slide off the chain and open the door a bit wider, but I don't invite her in. The doorman said it was all right for me to come up, Molly explains, averting her eyes. I told him I knew Blake.
Oh, brother. This guy must be new then, because no one who's worked in this upscale building for more than a day would ever let unapproved visitors into the elevator.
I bet 100 puck bunnies show up here daily claiming to know Blake or Wes. I make a mental note to tell Blake to have a chat with the guy. Is he here? She asks, trying to peer past me.
He's in the shower.
Blake's ex bites her lip. Oh, I see. And you?
And me what?
I can't stop a sarcastic retort. Am I in the shower? No, Molly, I'm not in the shower. Irritation flickers in her eyes. I need to speak to Blake. May I come inside and wait for him? I gape at her for a second. Then I answer in an incredulous tone. No offense, but I don't think Blake would appreciate coming out of the shower and finding you sitting on his couch. If you need to speak to him, why don't you give him a call? She scowls, and it's not a good look for her.
Because he's not answering my calls.
She adjusts the strap of her black leather purse.
Look, I need to talk to him.
Why? I ask bluntly. Apparently, Molly doesn't like to be questioned because she scowls even harder.
That's none of your business, Janet.
It's Jess, I say in a tight voice,
which you already know. And FYI,
I'm sure you're trying to make me feel inferior or some shit by purposely screwing up my name every time you see me, but it's not working. You can call me Janet or Jackie or Julia fucking child, but it won't change the fact that I'm Blake's girlfriend.
God. I should probably shut my mouth already, but for some reason I can't stop talking.
The sight of this woman who had the greatest man in the world and then lied to him in order to keep him, it's infuriating.
He kept your secret for 5 years, I say in a low voice. He allowed his family to think the worst of him. He allowed you to be the martyr when, in reality, you broke his heart. He did this because your reputation was more important to him than his.
Molly has the decency to wince. But you didn't deserve it, I say frankly, and you don't deserve to even be in the same room as him. You're here to apologize, right? to try to win his forgiveness so he talks to Brenna on your behalf? So your best friend stops thinking you're a monster? Her cheeks redden. Do you realize how unfair that is? My voice softens. I won't let you drag him back into your bullshit, Molly. I'll tell him you stopped by. I'll pass along whatever message you want me to give him, but if he asks for my opinion, I'm going to tell him that you're not worth his time. Jess, she pleads, and there's desperation in her eyes. She must be desperate if she's actually using my name. You need to do this for me. If you don't, I'll tell the wags you're a gold digger, and they'll shun you.
Knock yourself out, I growl.
I don't give a crap about joining some club, even if they do make really yummy daiquiris. You hurt Blake. You hurt him, and I'm not letting you hurt him again, you hear me? So turn around, put your weepy lying ass in the elevator, and pick up the phone to leave him a message, because there's no way I'm letting you step foot in this apartment.
Her mouth opens in a protest, but I'm already shutting the door. Then I lock it for good measure. Maybe I was out of line. Maybe I overstepped, crossed a line that's going to make Blake furious with me, but...
Thank you.
The gruff voice has me spinning around in shock. Blake is right behind me, clad in nothing but a towel that rides low on his hips. For once, he doesn't offer a cocky remark about his nearly naked state. He doesn't give me his goofy Blake grin or make some inappropriate comment. He simply stands there, staring at me with something akin to wonder. How much of that did you hear? I ask ruefully.
Most of it.
His throat bobs as he swallows.
Nobody's ever...
He clears his throat.
Nobody's ever defended me like that. I mean, Jesus, Jesse. I think you actually would have beat her up if she tried coming in here.
Very likely, I admit. Now he grins. My Blake is back.
Blake. Closure. It's a funny thing. 5 years ago, I was going to marry a girl named Molly. I loved her. I thought she loved me. And it didn't work out. Then I spent 5 years trying to pretend it hadn't ruined my entire view on relationships. I played along with a crazy lie because I didn't want my family to get hurt by Molly the way I'd been hurt. But despite that, I'd thought I'd moved on. I have moved on, but I didn't realize until this very moment that there's been a thundercloud following me around since then. I've smiled, and I've laughed, and I've fucked, but that cloud was always there. Not anymore. Because Jess Canning just shot her rays of sunshine into that cloud, and now my sky is so blue that I can't even remember the gray. She defended me. She made it crystal clear that she's never, ever going to let anyone hurt me. Nobody's ever done that for me before. I exhale in a big fat rush, and then I just fucking ask what I've been wanting to ask her for weeks. You want to move in with me? She blinks. I'm sorry, what? Do you want to move in with me? In here? Together? The surprise doesn't leave her expression, but it's joined with suspicion. Are you only asking because you feel sorry for me? Fuck no, I say immediately. I march over and plant myself next to her. I'm asking because I want you to move in. When she looks ready to object, I hold up my hand. I wouldn't dream of offering you a free ride, I add in a wry tone. You can pay rent or utilities or whatever you feel comfortable paying, okay? It isn't a handout or a pity offer or some trick on my part. I just want you to come live with me. She studies my face. Why? Because I love you. I roll my eyes. Fucking duh. Her face softens, but then her phone rings, goddammit. And I don't blame her for checking it because she's been waiting for this call since we got home. Hold that thought, my girl says. But actually, your timing is a little weird, because there's someone else who needs to be your roommate. What? I try to guess what she means and come up blank. Like a threesome? I joke. Right. Only your mind would go there, she says as the concierge's buzzer rings. Jess marches over, grabs the handset and says, "Send her up." Even I forget that we were sort of having a moment there because Jessie disappears into the hallway and shuts the door behind her. "You know you just locked yourself out, right?" I call through the wood. "Guess I should have asked for my own key first," she replies. I hear low voices a minute later. Jess confers with someone, then taps politely on the door. "Blake, are you ready to be surprised?" When I pull open the door, Jess is standing there, with a nervous smile on her face and a chocolate lab puppy in her arms. "Holy shit." Shyly, she says, "This guy is all yours if you want. Jamie and I will walk him when you're on the road. And there's a doggy daycare just 4 blocks away if you want him to have more fun." I should probably be listening to every word she says, but that's hard when the puppy opens his mouth in a goofy smile and looks up at me. "Oh!" I reach for him. "Aren't you the cutest thing I've ever seen?" I hold him up and he wiggles in my hands, his soft puppy fur tickling my wrists. I stroke his floppy ears as I gape at Jess. "Where did you get him? Puppies cost a mint." "Well, after I heard what happened to your dog, I called Paula from Broken Paws and told her I wanted to get you a dog. And she had a pregnant one at the shelter."
"No way. Puppies go quickly, though."
Jess smiles. "She saved one for you because that woman would do anything for you. And if you decide this idea of mine is just too crazy, she said she could find another home for him with one phone call."
I let the puppy lick my nose. Jesus, I've had him for under 5 minutes and already there's no way I'm letting him go. "I love him," I declare. Then I catch myself because I'm not going to profess my love for a dog, even one as cute as this, before I say it to my girlfriend. "Wait, I love you. So move in with me."
Her chest expands with a big breath. She rocks back on her heels and smiles at the ceiling. "Okay, it's a little nutty, but I'll do it. I want to be with you."
"Isn't that nutty?" I object.
"Well, that line of argument is a lost cause because I'm a little nutty all the time. It's part of my charm."
"Embrace the nutty, J-babe. Move in. Study for your tests on the couch with the puppy. Sleep naked in my bed."
I take a step closer and touch my lips to hers.
"You make Blake Riley smiley."
"I know," she says, kissing me back.
The puppy thumps its stubby tail against my chest, and everything is perfect.
The kiss cam starts now, fans.
Jess. For the very last time, I stand in front of the tiny dorm room mirror on the back of our door and check my outfit. "What do you think?" I ask Violet. I'm wearing skinny black jeans and a low-cut cashmere sweater. My boobs hiked up to my chin by my most ambitious bra.
"You look hot, as usual."
Violet sits on her own bed with a textbook, looking blue. "You know there's a quiz tomorrow, right?" "Yep, I studied all afternoon. It's going to have to do."
"Because you have other things to do tonight. Like Blake Riley."
Violet tries to apply her usual snippy tone to this remark, but it doesn't quite work. She watches me with jealous eyes. "Take a study break, Violet," I urge. "Call Keith. Have a quickie and then quiz each other. He's gone to a bar to watch the game on TV."
"So go with him?"
She just shakes her head. Apparently her folks were less than pleased with her exam performance last month, so she's hitting the books harder than ever these days.
"It just won't be the same around here without you."
She casts an eye over the duffel bag and two boxes on the bed. "Jamie will show up any minute now to pick me up. After the game, we'll unload my stuff in the parking garage of what is now my building, too. Violet, you won't miss me. Think of all the quiet you'll get now. And nobody will eat cup of noodles on the sly and hide the evidence in the student lounge trash." She looks properly horrified.
"Cup o' noodles?
Gross. They're very budget-friendly."
"What's budget-friendly?"
my brother asks from the doorway. "Hey, you look great," I tell him, "even if that shirt is an awfully bright color for you." Jamie looks down at the lime green check pattern on his shirt and smiles.
"I love this shirt. Are you ready to go?"
"Born ready." but now Violet looks stricken. Okay, let's hug it out, bitch. My roommate gets off the bed and gives me one of her angular hugs. The girl could take some lessons from Mama Riley. I'll still see you in class. You know that, right? Now you have to commute to school, Violet points out. She's right, but it's totally worth it. All that extra time with Blake and the puppy. How is Puddles? I ask my brother, releasing Violet. He grins.
Took a couple of new pictures. Couldn't help myself.
He pulls his phone out of his pocket, unlocks it, and shows me the screensaver. Aww, Violet croons. Puddles, named by Blake, of course, is rolling on his back on the rug like a frowsy milkmaid in a haystack. I can't decide who I'll cuddle first tonight, Blake or the puppy. Maybe both at once. Is that weird?
Let's do this.
Jamie picks up my box of textbooks.
Jesus, this is a backbreaker.
Sure is, I say cheerfully. I have almost as many shiny, complicated textbooks as Violet now. I'm not afraid anymore. The work is still hard, but I can tough it out. I grab the duffel and heft my smaller box. Come on, baby bro. Let's go beat Dallas. Traffic slows us down, unfortunately. By the time we're speedwalking through the stadium corridors, the game is already in progress. This time, Jamie and I don't head for his usual seats. Tonight, we're watching from the WAGS box. I follow my brother up an escalator and down a corridor to a set of shiny turnstiles. Before we reach them, Jamie digs something out of his shirt pocket and hands it to me. I look down at a plastic team ID card with my photo on it. Jessica Canning, it reads. Roll, WAGS, Riley. Oh my God, I yelp. It's so official. That's cuckoo. My brother waves his card in front of the turnstile, which springs open for him.
All part of the fun.
I use my card at the turnstile too, and then Jamie leads me along a curved corridor lined with fancy wooden doors, each with a corporate plaque beside it. I see boxes for Canada's two largest banks and an insurance firm. The fourth one simply says, WAGS. Jamie opens the door and ushers me inside. Katie Hewitt spots us first, waving her tequila bottle in our direction. You're late, she hollers. Get over here, Cannings. I have a sudden thought. Jamie, is there going to be hazing? Since I've become a nerd again, my tolerance for alcohol has plummeted. How embarrassing would it be to get plastered and throw up on the WAGS my first night here? My brother chuckles.
It depends what you mean by hazing. You'll see.
Ladies, our newest member has arrived. Get the bag. I reach Katie, who grabs me into a hug. Jessica, you were holding out on us, you sneaky Pete. Blake told Erickson, who told Luco, who told Estrella that his new girlfriend would be here tonight. And I was all, what new girlfriend? And then I saw they made you an ID card, so we had to hustle with your welcome packet. Why didn't you say anything the last time we saw you? She puts a hand on her hip, and I'm momentarily distracted by a retina-searing flash of brilliance. It's the four giant diamond rings on her hand. Focus, Jess. Well, it's a new thing. Katie smiles at me, her Toronto shade lipstick perfect again tonight. Usually the girlfriends practically do a pole vault to get in here. We're glad to have you, though. His last girlfriend? She rolls her eyes. We called her Velcro. I knew it wouldn't last, and when he came to his senses, she did not go quietly. She shakes her head. Blake deserves someone as sweet as you are. I could not be happier for the two of you. Thank you. This is, a nice place you've got here. I glance around at the rich wood paneling and the candlelit buffet. I wouldn't even know I was in a hockey stadium. Well, make yourself comfortable. We spent a lot of time in here. Are you ready for your welcome packet? She doesn't wait for a response. Girls? She yodels. Let's give Jess her party favors.
Should be fun, my brother murmurs under his breath.
Wait, she needs a drink first, Estrella says. Where are my manners? Katie yelps. Champagne, margarita, beer?
I would love a beer, I tell her,
choosing the simplest option. 2 seconds later, Estrella is pushing one into my hand. All right, let's tell her what she's won, Johnny.
Katie reaches behind a leather wingback chair and emerges with a giant shopping bag. Blake would love it. The bag is coated in Toronto red glitter.
Ta-da! The welcome packet.
Wow. She slides one hand into the bag and pulls out a sheaf of papers stapled together on the edge.
This is the WAGS booklet of tips and tricks. It's your basic how to sneak into a hotel on the road handbook. How to shake off a pesky reporter, that sort of thing.
Thanks. I didn't know that being Blake's girlfriend would come with a user's manual. But what's one more textbook in my life?
And now for the fun stuff.
She digs into the bag again and extracts a bottle of Chanel nail polish in, wait for it, Toronto red.
Oh, I love it. My poor nails don't get any attention these days.
I'll have to fix that. Thank you. I tuck the bottle into the small handbag I'm carrying tonight.
Estrella shakes her head.
You're going to need the whole bag, babe. We're not done here yet.
Oh.
The next thing Katie removes from the bag is a jersey. And it is not regulation. It looks much tighter than anyone could play in, and it just happens to have a sweeping V-neck. Katie turns it around so everyone can see the back. It reads, Riley is mine. I burst out laughing.
Cute, right? She says, draping it over my arm.
We had to get team boxer shorts for your brother instead. She dips back into the bag. Next, we have the family-sized Tums for those stressful games when your man is struggling.
Aw,
everyone says.
I got those too, Jamie tells me.
Katie tucks the antacids back in the bag and then grins wickedly.
This is something else you're going to need.
She pulls out a long, slender box and puts it in my hands. Confused, I lift the lid. Then I quickly drop it again when I realize I'm holding a luxury vibrator. My face gets hot.
Thanks?
Katie pats my hand.
Keep it on the charger, hun, because road trips are long.
And in a similar vein, she slaps her thigh.
I said similar vein.
The other women laugh as she pulls out a clone a Wang kit.
Do it yourself,
and then do yourself, the box enthuses.
Oh my God, I sputter,
though the idea of a Blake dildo is honestly appealing.
Got one of those too, Jamie says. Totally works.
Eek!
I clap my hands to my ears. I do not want to hear about your sex life. Not because it's with a guy, but because you're my brother.
Whoa,
he holds up his hands.
I totally get it. Feel free to keep all the naked details to yourself, too.
But wait,
Sheila, the goalie's wife, tugs at my elbow. Is it true that Blake has a giant dick?
Yikes.
I'm really not willing to answer that question. Not on my first beer, anyway. Luckily, I don't have to because something exciting seems to be happening down on the ice.
Power play!
A voice blares over the loudspeaker, and all the women lean toward the rink, tensing.
We can do this, Katie yells. Yes!
I'm not in a good spot to see the action, so my eyes fly to a large screen TV on the wall, showing the televised coverage. The boys are engaged in a high-speed game of keep away. The camera zooms in on Erickson, who passes to Wesley, who passes to Blake, who shoots. The whole arena roars, and the announcer's voice shouts, Goal!
Oh my God!
I shriek. As I check the scoreboard, it changes from 0-0 to 1-0. Blake has just scored the first goal of the game.
Hey, Cannings!
Katie yanks her tequila off a table.
You both have to do a shot. One for the goal and one for that assist.
No can do.
My brother shakes his head.
I'm driving. Sad but true.
She wrinkles her perfect nose.
What a shame.
Jess? She pours a shot of tequila and hands it to me.
In for a penny, in for a pound.
I toss the shot back, and the sudden burn of tequila makes my eyes water. Now that I'm a nerd, I probably can't hold my liquor. If Blake gets a hat trick, they might have to carry me out of here on a stretcher. Jamie hands me a wedge of lime, amusement in his eyes.
Thanks, I manage.
Several women congratulate me,
and I have a moment of embarrassment. I didn't have anything to do with Blake's goal, I whispered to my brother, feeling like a fraud. He puts two strong hands on my shoulders and squeezes.
I hear you, but you make Blake happy, right? He goes to work feeling good. And 16,000 fans appreciate that right now. I'm pretty pumped up when my kids score a goal, and I didn't shoot it myself.
You are their coach, I point out.
Is it really that different?
This idea gives me a happy rush. Or maybe it's just the booze. Jamester. I'm going down to the stands to say hello to Mama Riley for a minute while I'm still sober.
I burp.
Soberish.
Good plan.
He pulls something out of his pocket.
Want these?
He hands me a pair of disposable earplugs. I press them away. Nice thought, but she'd be offended. Downstairs, I discover that my WAG's ID is like a master key to the arena. Security guards wave me through doors, and nobody blinks when I make my way to the reserved seating behind the home team bench. I spot Blake's parents, or rather, Blake's mother. She's on her feet, of course, shouting loud enough to make everyone around her wince.
Mow 'em down, Blakey! Cut that lawn!
Her head swivels abruptly when she notices me. Jessica!
Get over here!
2 seconds later, I'm enveloped in one of her mama bear hugs and sporting at least 2 broken ribs when she finally releases me.
Did you see our boy's goal? She exclaims.
Thing of beauty!
It was pretty awesome, I agree. I just came down to say hello. I smile at Blake's dad. Hey, Mr. Riley.
Papa, he grunts. You call me Papa. Okay, Papa.
You want to sit with us for the second period? Mama Riley offers. No, I promised the WAGs I'd sit upstairs tonight. Next time, I promise. Her gaze drifts back to the ice, where the final 2 minutes of play are unfolding. Toronto's still up by 1, but Dallas has regrouped, and they're rushing our net. Xanders, one of the D-men, is too slow to stop the attack, and the Dallas forward unleashes a slap shot that makes the crowd give a collective gasp. And then, ping, the puck bounces away.
Say hi to the post, Dallas. No goal.
Mama Riley's shriek nearly shatters my eardrums. No goal, I echo in a normal human volume. Blake's mother frowns.
Jessica, what was that?
What was what?
Is that how you root for our boys? Where's the enthusiasm?
Where's the heart?
I shift awkwardly. I'm not much of a screamer. And in the back of my mind, I hear Blake's cocky voice wholeheartedly disagreeing with that.
Unacceptable, she says firmly. You're a Riley now, Jessica, and you know what Rileys are?
Insane?
Loud,
she finishes. So what'll it be, Jesse? Are you a soft-spoken, not-cheering-from-your-heart fan, or are you a Riley? A slow smile stretches my mouth. I'm a Riley.
Good.
Now let's make these last 30 seconds count. And for the next 30 seconds, I stand in the aisle with Mama Riley, and the two of us scream, shriek, yell, and shout until my throat is raw and my ears are ringing. After the buzzer goes off, I take a much-needed sip from the water bottle she hands me and wonder if my larynx might be permanently damaged. But then, all thoughts of my broken vocal cords disappear because Blake suddenly appears in front of the glass at the home bench. Grinning widely, he taps the plexi with one gloved hand, waving for me to come down. I'm slightly self-conscious as I hurry down the steps. Blake is making his way toward the entrance of the chute, still gesturing for me to follow. There are dozens of people leaning over the railings at each side of the tunnel, screaming and cheering and snapping pics of the players as they lumber past. I elbow my way through the mob until I'm in the front of the pack, just as Blake reaches me. His helmet is tucked under his arm, sweaty hair stuck to his forehead, and he's pretty much a giant because he's still wearing his skates. He leans in until his mouth is practically glued to my ear.
Blew you a kiss after the goal, he whispers. Did you see?
I saw. I give his damp cheek a quick peck, which triggers several high-pitched shrieks from the females in our vicinity. Sounds of betrayal rather than approval. Uh-oh, I whisper back. I might start a riot. He tips his head and grins ruefully.
Yeah, you might want to head back to the Wags box. The Blake Brigade is kind of possessive.
The Blake Brigade? Seriously? I roll my eyes. You named your groupies?
They named themselves, he protests. They've got a website and everything.
I sigh. Oh, of course they do.
Anyway, gotta go. Just wanted to tell you how hot you look.
My boyfriend leans in and smacks a very loud kiss on my lips, which I'm pretty sure is captured by every news camera and cell phone in the rink. Instinctively, I look up at the Jumbotron. Sure enough, the screen is frozen on a shot of Blake kissing me.
The kiss cam starts now, fans,
it screams. Cheese us, I mutter. My five siblings are probably laughing their asses off right now.
Babe, you said cheese us.
I did not. Yeah. I grin up at the loud, crazy, incredible man I love. I guess I did.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Good Boy, written by Serena Bowen and Elle Kennedy. Performed by Teddy Hamilton and Tanya Eby. Executive producers Susie Bright and Mike Charzik. Producer Neil Basic. Copyright 2017 by Serena Bowen and Elle Kennedy. Production copyright 2017 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.